Well, although it was not aesthetically beautiful, the win is a beautiful thing. And LSU dominated Texas A&M from the jump street to go to 13-2 in league play. LSU baseball back on the diamond tonight. We'll have a preview, and we'll see what to expect from one Eric Walker making his first start since the 2017 College World Series. Who are the front runners for the Heisman Trophy in 2019? We'll debate that, plus the NFL Combine. The Tigers, who has a chance of improving his stock the most? These stories and more today, Hump Day Wednesday, February 27th, 2019.
Now Jokic goes to work, gets down the lane, gets double teamed. Kick out three, Murray. Yes! Oh, that's large by the Blue Arrow! 6-point lead for Denver with 2:10 to go.
Seven on the shot clock, flag, crossover. Darius Day strips it loose. Javonte Smart the other way. He's got numbers. Steps by a defender, goes right to left, up and under, layup good. That'll make it 54-39. Nas Reed now coming up to set the high screen. They'll try the double team. They got Smart locked up. Comes away with it, passes to Taylor. Taylor attacks the rim, shot blocked, picked up by Reed in midair, and Nas puts up the shot to make it 63-52. It wasn't pretty, but it counts.
Amen, brother. That's all that matters. Doesn't matter how pretty or how ugly, just get it done. And that's what LSU did. Good afternoon. Welcome. This is the Jordy Helpert Show, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. CD back in the master control suite in the 237 Roof Studios on the campus of Delta Media, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. It's great to be with you here, Studio 1A. LSU takes care of business, 66-55. They're now 23-5 overall, 13-2 in league play. My bracketologist, Shelby Mast. Bracket Wag, USA Today, has LSU moved up to the 3 line. How about that? Their net is at 13. They're 8-2 in 10 quad 1 games. They have an 11 RPI, a 14 strength of schedule, and a non-conference strength of schedule of 10. The next two ball games they play on the road at Alabama Saturday and then next week at Florida are quad one games, and they will be important, and they are significant, and they are tough places to play. But LSU gets the job done, and that's all that matters. They're starting five, all in double figures. Naz Reed with 18 points, 11 rebounds. Javonte Smart, 17 points, 7 rebounds. Cavell Bigby Williams, I love him, 10 points, 11 rebounds. Skylar Mays with 11 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists to lead the Tigers in that category, and Marlon Taylor with 10 points and 4 boards. Tigers don't get a point off their bench, but the bench was significant. They dominated this game despite shooting just 35% from the floor, shooting just 2 of 19 from behind the arc, but they got to the free throw line again 21 times. They made 18 of them, 85.7%. Good guard play. And you get Tremont Waters back for Saturday's game against Alabama, or so we're told at this point in time. So without the catalyst and the spark plug, the Tigers go 2-0 with wins over Tennessee in overtime and with a win over Texas A&M. And it was kind of refreshing tonight to have to go through a nail-biter. Just really wasn't in doubt from the get-go. LSU got 40 points in the paint, 18 made free throws, and they only turned the ball over 9 times, back-to-back games with single-digit turnovers. LSU blocked 6 shots, and had 10 steals. So they had a 17-6 advantage. That's a plus 11 in the points off of turnovers. LSU won it by 11. It's not that difficult to figure out. You protect the ball. You get to the free throw line. You make them. You take other turnovers from the other team and turn them into points. You're going to win games. And they won it by double digits despite their anemic shooting. Other teams, zone LSU. Zone them. Make them prove they can shoot the ball from the perimeter. And until they do it, stay in it. That is the formula, I think, for success against this basketball team. LSU showed they could win it in a slowdown where they weren't shooting well, but I kind of miss those 85, 90-point games where it's up and down and free-flowing, and they're shooting the ball well. Just one of those days. Couldn't buy one. 0 for 9 in the first half from the land of three. But free throws kept them in it. And the first half was just beautiful. They were locked in defensively, and the game plan was obvious. Do not guard one of their players, Chris Collins. Just stay off of him. Play 4 against 5. And just clog up that middle and don't let them get inside. And LSU worked it to perfection. So a rather easy win in front of 10,000 people in Peach Palace. 23-5 and 13-2. Wow. That's your lead for the day. But also coming up, I've got some, I think, the perfect solution on what the Pelicans need to do with Anthony Davis. For one night and one night only. I'll explain that. Coming up on the program, Ben McDonald will join us. Eric Walker starts his first game since his appearance as a freshman in the College World Series. Then he had the Tommy John surgery. Ben McDonald will preview LSU versus Southern University. That's at the box tonight. Cody Worsham will join us, LSU's digital media director. We'll talk about LSU versus A&M from his perspective. Hour number two, Hot Topics. Michael Huguenin of The Athletic, the early odds for the Heisman Trophy Award for 2019. They should call it the Quarterback Award for 2019 because everybody that's on the list is a quarterback. We'll tell you who's the favorite and who's a sleeper and who outside of that quarterback position should we keep our eyes on next college football season. And Mike Dettillier will join us. We'll talk about not changing NFL rules and the NFL Combine that starts Friday and runs for 4 days. Six LSU Tigers have been invited. We know about Devin White. We know about Greedy Williams. But who else is out there? Who can improve their stock the most? We'll have that information as well. CD, good afternoon, my friend. Just wanted to say a quick hello. How are you?
I am doing fantastic, Jordy. I mean, we have LSU get yet another win on the board. It's just a great time to be a fan of the Tigers right now, right?
It really is. I mean, look, we talked about what football did. Baseball's number one in the country. LSU's moving up the charts in basketball, track and field, both men and women in the top five, gymnastics in the top five. It is a really spectacular time, and it should be that way all the time. LSU got everything you need to be successful in every sport. And so it really is a good time to be. Softball's right up there as well. Don't want to leave anybody out. Swimming and diving's good. They're all good, as well they should. All right, let's take our first time out. 11 minutes after the hour. Big, busy day planned for you and yours. The Golden Spikes Award winner, number one pick in the Major League Baseball draft back in the day, the All-American Ben McDonald. Next on this LSU baseball team that's off to a 7-0 start, trying to make it 8-0 before they head to Austin to take on the ranked Longhorns. That's next. You're listening to the Jordy Helper Show on Acadiana's number one sports station by far. 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. Numbers don't lie, baby. They don't.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
We'll be right back. Welcome back. LSU baseball tonight taking on Southern University at 6:30. LSU with a 52-2 record against its intra-city rival in a series that began back in 1970. LSU's won 13 consecutive games against Southern. You still have to play, but that's not what we're really going to be looking at. Let's bring in our good friend, the All-American Golden Spikes Award winner, which is like the Heisman Trophy of football. The Golden Spikes is to baseball. That's Ben McDonald, kind enough to join us, old number 19. Ben, how are you, buddy? What's up?
Good, Jordy. Everything's good, man. How about you?
I'm doing terrific. We saw you earlier in the day, and I asked you to come on board because I wanted to get your thoughts on what everybody's going to be watching tonight, and that is sophomore Eric Walker making his first start of the season, his first start since the 2017 College World Series before Tommy John surgery. He's got to be frustrated. He was scheduled to make his first start last week against Northwestern and then again last night against South Alabama, but both games were postponed, so tonight he gets to start. What have you seen from him early on, albeit in relief, but now he gets the ball at the start of the game?
Well, I mean, his first time out, opening weekend, he looked really good. He looked like the Eric Walker of 2 years ago. You know, he didn't walk anybody. He struck out two in a couple of innings and didn't allow a run. Looked really good. Now, his last time out last weekend against Bryan in a relief appearance again wasn't quite as sharp. Walked a couple of guys, and you could just tell he was just missing mechanics a little bit off. But that's expected. I mean, look, the guy hadn't really pitched competitively, as you mentioned, since June of 2017. So in a lot of ways, he's still getting his feet wet. The good news is, Jordy, is from all indications, he feels good. His arm feels great. His body feels good. He just needs to continue to get his feet wet, continue to get some innings under his belt, continue to do the things that made him successful. Because don't forget, I mean, at times 2 years ago, he was LSU's ace early in the year when Tosha and Lang struggled a little bit. He was the guy. And look, he made everybody's freshman All-American team. He was outstanding and all-conference guy, too. So he's got it in the tank. There's no doubt about it. And I think with just a few more outings under his belt tonight, we'll see where he's at with his command and everything. He's not a power guy, but look, he wants to get back in the rotation. Make no mistake about it. He was a rotation guy his freshman year, and he wants to get back in that rotation, and tonight will be a big step towards that direction if he pitches well.
Doesn't that help LSU? You got all these hard-throwing starters like you were back in your time, and then you come up with I don't want to call it a junk picture, but he's old school. He's more of a location, real estate guy, right?
Oh, no doubt. I mean, that's his game. I mean, you're going to see a fastball that's going to be 85 to 88 most probably tonight. But if he's on his game, look, it's never in the middle of the plate. It's the outer third. It's the inner third. He can go to the corners. He can elevate when he needs to. Plus, he's got an outstanding breaking ball and a really good changeup. And what separates Eric Walker when he steps on campus from most other hard throwers is he has the ability to throw all three of those pitches in the zone in just about any count he chooses to. So he's what you call not a thrower. He's a real pitcher. And there's a place for guys like that in college baseball. And he can get a lot of outs by doing that.
Greg Maddux made a lot of money being a pitcher rather than a thrower, right?
No doubt. No doubt. And that's kind of what Eric Walker is. He's a lot like Maddux. And he moves the ball and he just spots it up really well. He's just a true pitcher.
You told me you just got back from a week of spring training with the Baltimore Orioles. You do a lot of their games on television as the season progresses, and you talked to me about, and I was fascinated by it, how the technology that major league clubs have now to evaluate pitchers. Can you give a Cliff Notes version of that, please?
Yeah, I mean, so much of technology and analytics in baseball the last 5 years has just blown up. A lot of the information we get, there's a lot to it, but I think for a pitcher, some of it is very, very valuable. For instance, you hear the high spin rate fastball. You hear people say, well, so-and-so's got a high spin rate fastball. What that means is the average big league fastball, RPM-wise, spins towards home plate at about 2,200 RPMs. When you start getting above that, say, 2,400, 2,500, that means your ball stays on plane a little bit longer as a pitcher. The old saying back in my day, Jordy, was you hear the hitters come back and say the ball jumps on you at the last second. You know, that was the hitter's reference to that kind of a fastball years ago. Now they come back and say must have a high spin rate fastball, and it just stays on plane a little bit longer. And so what guys are really realizing at the big league level and really at the collegiate level too, for the programs that have access to this kind of technology, is we've always been taught, look, throw fastballs down at the knees, that's the best place to throw it. And then most of the time that is the case, but for the guys that are blessed with a high spin rate fastball, he may change his game a little bit and start to elevate to the top of the strike zone, because hitters just have a hard time seeing that ball, catching up to it. You see a lot of swings and misses and pop-ups when they do, you know, able to get a bat on it a little bit. So, you know, and what I saw in spring training, you know, I told you this morning, it was crazy, but, you know, the Orioles had six bullpen guys, six pitchers throwing at the same time. Well, behind every bullpen mound, there was a machine set up and a guy in a desk and a chair hooked to a computer to that machine. And every pitch they threw went to a memory bank to that computer. And it's getting so crazy now. And so they're reading the spin rate. They're reading the break of the fastball, how much the fastball moves, how much the breaking ball moves. And they can kind of go back to the pitchers afterwards and say, listen, your two-seam fastball has a lot more movement than your four-seam does, you know, or vice versa. And maybe you want to use this pitch more than that pitch. And maybe your slider is a much better pitch on this analytic stuff than what your curveball is. Now, back in my day, the hitter always told you whether you had a good pitch or not. If I threw my breaking ball and he swung and missed it a bunch, I'd go back to, I got a pretty good breaking ball. But if I threw it and he got hammered all the time, that would mean that, oh, maybe my breaking ball's not that good, or maybe my changeup's not that good. But now we have technology and bullpens to let you know maybe what you're going to have the most success using in your repertoire.
Is this paralysis by analysis? I mean, that's a lot of data, right?
It is a lot of data, and that would be my concern with it. It's too much information, because at the end of the day, it's a simple game. You know, we know all, we've heard this a thousand times, right? You catch, you throw it, you hit it, you know, you hit your spot, you get guys out, and all that is still true today. But I still think you can take some of this information for guys that aren't having success, and maybe you can change a grip on a fastball, or maybe a grip on a breaking ball, and you can have a guy be a little bit more consistent. But it still boils down to mechanics, and it still boils down to being able to throw the ball where you want to throw it.
Was that the problem with a Zach Hess who had that rough first outing, but he certainly improved in the second outing? Is it mechanics? He talked about a higher leg lift. Is it as simple as that?
It can be. I mean, we sometimes as pitchers, we rush out. And what I mean by that, our body kind of gets out in front of our arm a little bit. In other words, it's not all synced up. Remember, Zach Hess is 6'6", 6'7". I can relate to him. And that means it's a lot to get synced up with a guy that tall, you know. And that's why I always use the golf analogy to people. How many 6'7" golfers do you see on the PGA Tour? And the answer to that, of course, is none. Most of them are 5'9", 5'10". The reason is the swing can stay compact and you can repeat that swing better if you're a smaller guy. That's the case in pitching too. Now, when it gets special, when you get like Noah Syndergaard and others, where you're 6'4", 6'5", and you can consistently repeat it and you can sync it up. And sometimes you got to grow into your body. You mature in your early 20s, and that's when it all kind of comes together. I still think it's in the tank for Zach. Yes, I think mechanically he flies open his shoulder a little bit. He tries to throw hard sometimes, and that's what happens. And so it's a mechanical thing for him. I think the more reps he gets, he's going to get better, Jordan. He showed you times last year. Look, he was dominant at times on Friday nights, but those other times he was not very good. And what Zach Hess has to do is still keep those good outings, but figure out a way not to be bad, just kind of be so-so in those bad outings. And what I mean by that is still pitch six innings, but instead of giving up seven runs, maybe you give up three runs, you know, and you keep your team in the ballgame. I think that's one of his goals this year.
Ben McDonald, kind enough to join us. He'll be on the call of the LSU-Southern game on the SEC Network Plus. Major League Baseball, American League, is it a three-team race again? Red Sox, Yankees, Astros, or is there somebody else that you're keeping your eye on?
Well, I mean, in every indication that you get right now, that's what it's going to be. You know, I mean, the Yankees didn't lose a whole lot. The Red Sox are outstanding again. The Astros, you know, added a pitcher too, Wade Miley, a local guy from right here in the Livingston Parish area, you know. So I think it's a three-team race. You never know. Look, Tampa Bay, everybody sleeps on Tampa Bay in the AL East, but everybody forgets they didn't make the playoffs, but they won 90 games last year with a young team. Just so happens the wild card was the Oakland A's, who won 97 games. And so that's the danger with the AL East, is that the Yankees and the Red Sox are going to be around that 100 mark. You know that. So everybody's kind of fighting for that wild card position, you know. But, you know, Cleveland will be pretty good in that central division. I don't know what's going to happen out west. Is it going to be, you know, the Anaheim Angels? Is it Seattle? Is it Oakland like it was last year? But certainly the three that going into spring training here, you know, the Astros, the Red Sox, and of course, the Yankees are going to be the three to beat, no doubt about it.
I mean, don't you wish you could play now? I mean, this Rockies third baseman's getting $32.5 million a year. What's going to happen with Bryce Harper? I mean, we're approaching March, and this guy still doesn't have a team. What's going on with that, you think?
Yeah, you know, I hate to see that. You know, I wish that the free agents would get signed and be in camp and get their feet wet, because he's going to get – the truth of the matter, he's going to get way behind because he's missing a lot of reps, you know. And so I'm sure he'll get close to that kind of money too, you know, and he'll make a whole bunch of money like Machado did, and – You know, and the big question is, I think Trout's a free agent next year, you know, and look,
yes,
he's better than all of them. I mean, he really is. He's
absolutely
put up better numbers than all of them. So what is he going to be worth this time next year, you know? And so, look, there's a lot out there. There's some great players making a whole bunch of money. And, you know, it is what it is. And, look, if I'm an owner, I can't justify that kind of money. But, look, I always said, if they're going to give it to you, you'd be a fool not
absolutely
to take it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Ben McDonald joining us. All right, after Southern, LSU heads to Austin to take on Texas, another ranked team. That'll be their best competition to date. We'll know more about this club after next Sunday, this coming Sunday, I would believe.
Yes, no doubt. I mean, LSU, you know, 7-0 right now. Southern is improved under Kerrick Jackson, but they're not going to be a powerhouse. So really, the LSU's first 8 games, not against strong competition. But I will say this, there's a couple of pitchers they faced in the first 7 games that were SEC caliber. You know, the team continues to hit. They're hitting 50 points higher right now than what they hit last year. The home runs are up a little bit. They're leading the SEC in runs scored. I know it's just a sample size, but still, I like where the LSU offense is. I think the pitching staff has to get better. A 5 ERA is not going to cut it. But Texas is going to give them a real test. You know, Texas has got 3 real weekend guys. They got a really good bullpen. The offense is not as strong because they lost Cody Clemens and a couple of other guys. But still, when you go to Dishbach Field and you play in front of that kind of crowd over there, it's going to be LSU's really first test. And by Sunday night, we'll know a lot more about LSU baseball.
Do you ever think you're going to be a TV superstar? Come on, growing up in Denham Springs, Louisiana? Come on, big fella.
No, Jordy.
That's amazing. What a great story.
I struggled in high school and didn't even graduate from LSU. So, no, I never saw this coming. I just kind of lucked in it. Coach Burtman said something to me about 15 years ago. He said, man, you should get into doing some CST games, you know, and just you got pretty good knowledge of the game. And so I kind of hopped into it, and this is where it's led me. So it's busy. I'll do about 130 games this year, counting everything, and pro ball will be my busiest year yet. And so, yeah, I'm ripping and running, but I don't like to travel like you and everybody else. But once the game starts, yeah, and they say play ball, look,
it's fun.
I love it. I'm all into it. I like talking baseball, so I enjoy what I do.
You do a great job. Ben, thanks for the time, buddy. Have fun.
Anytime, Jordy. Take care.
All right, man. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. LSU basketball, Cody Worsham on the Jordy Helpert Show.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Helfert Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the app.
Another night, another win for LSU basketball, 66-55 over Texas A&M, 13-2. In SEC play and still atop the leaderboard with the tiebreakers over the two teams tied with them, Kentucky and Tennessee. Cody Worsham, the digital media director for LSU, kind enough to join us as he does after each and every LSU basketball game. Cody, I didn't know what to do with myself. It was, man, my nails are still here and, you know, my palms aren't sweaty. It was kind of a drama-free, for once in a blue moon, kind of a night.
Yeah, they just didn't let the foot off the gas defensively. They just guarded from start to finish. And when you do that, even if you don't have the best of offensive nights, your talent kind of has the space to take over and dominate. And so that's what LSU did. I mean, I think Texas A&M maybe got it within double digits once at the end, but there was very, very little time left. And they were able to just kind of, you know, slowly bleed out A&M, which was really good because this team has played so many close games, and you know, I'm quite frankly, I'm sick of overtime. Going back to even the football season, against Texas A&M. So it's nice to just have a comfortable win that you can kind of get your story framed in your mind with you know, 5-6 minutes left in the game.
Yeah, 40 points in the paint, 18 points at the free throw line, only 9 turnovers. That is a although not often, but that is a formula for success, and A&M just had no answer.
Yeah, you know, Will Wade talked about after the game, that's the way he likes to win basketball games. And, you know, I'm a little bit more, I don't know, of an idealist. I like when a team puts up 90 points.
Me too.
You know, I kind of like that exciting style up and down basketball, but from a coach's perspective, I totally understand what he means, because those things are dependable. Offensive rebounding shows up every game. Like, you don't just offensive rebound well one game and then poorly the next game. It's a pretty consistent, dependable factor. Same with the ability to get to the free throw line. Same with the ability to score points in the paint. Those are consistent things you can build around. And, you know, three-point shooting, jump shooting comes and goes for most people, unless you're the best of the best, like, you know, Steph Curry or something like that. In college, that stuff comes and goes. But they've kind of built their identity around things that are replicable and that you can kind of count on night to night. And so, at worst, you know, I think LSU played exceptionally well last night, particularly on the offensive end, but they did what they do, and then they guarded. And so when you do all of that, you're going to win pretty comfortably. And then when the shots are falling, that's when, you know, you go from good and dependable to excellent and able to be really dangerous.
I mean, 35% from the field, 10.5% from the three-point line. If you tell me that's an SEC game, and I'm telling you, man, you're in deep trouble. But they had this thing, they're up 20 points in the first half. They just, was it their defense that good, or is A&M just that bad offensively? They can't score.
Yeah, I mean, they had scored pretty well the last couple of games in this little, they had won 4 or 5 coming in. They're still not a great offensive team. They have some personnel issues. And then Will Wade is as good of a coach as I've been around. I mean, I go back to my AAU basketball coach, Jonathan Pixley, who's now the coach at Dunham. They're the two best coaches I've ever seen at figuring out the other team's weak point and exploiting it. So what I mean by that is last night, they put Naz Reid on Chris Collins, who's a 6'3" guard, but he's only made 3 shots all season. And they just put Naz Reid on him and said, all right, you don't really need to guard him. Just kind of hang out in the paint. And it did a couple of things. One, you know, Naz Reid was able to help and be around the paint and clog things up. But two, there was no one around Naz Reid when he was going up for rebounds. So he didn't have to box anybody out because Chris Collins wasn't going to crash the glass. So Naz Reid was just a free man in the paint to rebound. And so LSU, you know, won on the glass, and Naz got a bunch of rebounds. And Will Wade's really good at that. He's good at finding the other team's weak point and kind of daring them to play through it. And they usually take the bait, and it usually works out for LSU.
5 LSU starters in double figures, no points off their 3 players off the bench. But I would venture, and I'm going to go on a limb here because I like to do this every now and then, I would have given the game ball to a kid that played 14 minutes, didn't score a point, was 0-for-4 from the field. But his presence on the court, his energy on the court, his diving for a loose ball and deflection to a teammate for a layup, I thought it was brilliant. I'd give the game ball to Marshall Graves.
Yeah, I wouldn't take it away from him after you gave it to him. He was really solid. And it's more about the fact that he had to step up these last 2 games without Tremont Waters. He's now given you 21 minutes in those 2 games. He's been in the positive differential plus-minus in both of those games. I was actually looking at some of the numbers, and it's still a really small sample size, so I don't read into it a ton. But LSU's defense, when he's on the floor now in SEC, he's got the best defensive numbers. They're giving up less than a point per possession when he plays. He's just in the right spot all the time on defense. He plays like a former walk-on should play. He knows where to be. I mean, when you're a walk-on, it's usually because physically, you're not as gifted as your peers, and so you've got to make up for that with your smarts and being in the right place. And Marshall has that. He has the IQ, and he's got some physical skills. I mean, he's 6'4". He's long. He can shoot the basketball. So he's been a real positive boost to them, and the team feeds off of it too. They love him. They love Marshall. And so when he plays well, it just fires them up.
And the fans love him, too. Cody Worsham, LSU digital media reporter, kind enough to join us. What's up with Emmett Williams? First off, he went back to the old shorts. He's wearing the white compressions, and he's tweeting out, please pray for me. What's going on with Emmett Williams? Do you know?
No, I don't know about the tweet. You know, he came out late for warm-ups, and he was kind of stretching out his legs. And then Will Wade alluded after the game to some nicks and some bruises, so you know, I don't know anything. I'm putting 2 and 2 together. He probably had some kind of physical, not injury, but just something that was not quite right with him. I don't know about the somebody pray for me. I try not to read into tweets too much. I thought when he played last night, he gave them a nice little shot in the arm. He did look a little fired up. He got into it with an A&M player.
Yeah.
I think he had a couple words for a ref at some point. So, he was a little into it. But I think part of that is they just played 3 games in 6 days. Everybody kind of needs a day off and take a deep breath and gather themselves before this final push.
Naz Reid playing the best basketball of his short LSU career. I mean, he had 18 and 11. I thought he was really good defensively, like you talked about. He's rebounding the basketball. He's efficient offensively, 6 for 6 from the free throw line. I thought another really good outing by him.
Yeah, the best thing about that was he played well in the first half. He had 10 points and 8 rebounds in the first half. And he's been second half dominant all SEC play. I have a spreadsheet on my computer. It's not in front of me, but just basically what he's done in first halves versus second halves. And it's something like, 4 points and 3 rebounds per game in first halves of SEC games. And then 11 points and 4.5 rebounds in second halves. Hmm. He struggled to find his way early, but then responded really well in second halves. But last night, he was good in both halves. He started well. He was aggressive without fouling. He was decisive in his post-up moves. And he, I don't think it should be overlooked. The kid he was going up against, the big kid for A&M, I can't remember his name, but he's one of the leading shot blockers in the SEC.
Yes, Nebo and, or something, whatever.
Nebo. And Reed had no problems with him. I mean, he backed him down a couple times, put him under the rim, finished over him. I mean, it wasn't like he was going up against Collins on the other end, the guy that he was guarding, the 6'3 kid. He was going up against the best shot blocker by percentage in the SEC and making him look like a chump. I mean, he was schooling him. So that's big. That was good to see Naz playing that confident, that decisive. When he plays like that, the rest of the team feeds off of it. It makes LSU, so much more efficient on offense. And they needed it because last night nobody could buy a jumper. And so they just had to pound the paint, and Naz was happy to do that.
23-5 overall, 13-2 in the SEC, a net of 13. They're 8-2 in quad one wins, 11 in the RPI, 14 in strength of schedule, non-conference strength of schedules, 10. You're at Bama and at Florida. I would imagine those are quad one games there, right?
Yeah, they are. Both of those teams are in the top, well within the top 75 of the net, which that's a quad one opportunity if you're on the road against the top 75 team. So I think Bama's right around 50 and Florida's in the 20s. So that's going to be, if LSU gets a 10-2, Vanderbilt will not be a quad one opportunity.
Right.
If they get a 10-2 into quad one going into the SEC tournament, where it's top 50 neutral site, a 10-2 record against quad one is going to be one of the best figures in the country. I think the most wins against quad one right now is 10, and I can't remember who it is. It might be Virginia, but they're 10-2 in those opportunities. And here's LSU at 8-2. So you're going to get some chances to improve that. I don't know where this team ends up in the seeding. I think they're around a 3 or 4 right now. But if they keep winning basketball games, they're going to have a chance to lock up a 3 seed and maybe even sneak a little bit higher than that.
I think so.
Where you want to be.
If they get a little bit of help, I think a 2 seed is – if they sweep out, I think they've got a chance to be a 2 seed quite well. Alabama's one of these up-and-down teams, man. I just don't understand it. But I've got to believe with their length and size and look at – and I'm not saying LSU's a bad shooting team, but – I would zone LSU every trip down the floor just to try and slow them down a little bit and get the score down a little bit. I don't understand why more coaches don't do that.
Yeah, I'll have to go back and watch the tape and remember what Alabama did.
I think they zoned in the second half.
Yeah, and in the past they've done that against LSU and used their length. And, getting Tremont Waters back will obviously be huge for LSU if he is available. Because he just gives you another guy that can make some threes, because right now they're a little bit short on shooters. So, but you also have to get inside that zone and probe it. And LSU did a couple things last night that to attack the zone that were different. They put Skylar Mays in the middle once. They ran an overload once to get Marshall Graves to look in the corner. They did some different things. They can do a backdoor kind of screening action with Marla Taylor. So they've got some options, but I wouldn't be surprised if Bama does that at all. And they're so long. It, you know, two through four, they're basically identical, which makes it tough. Herb Jones is tough. They're a good team.
They are underachieved in many respects, but if you follow LSU basketball history, that's one of the more difficult places LSU's ever gone to get wins. And, I mean, great teams going in there have struggled in Tuscaloosa at that place. But, hey, do me a favor and tell Skylar Mays welcome to the club. He and I have something in common now as he is a part of the 1,000-point club at LSU. So tell him welcome to the family. It's like a brotherhood within the brotherhood. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I'll ask you the same question that Skylar got asked last night. Do you remember your first points at LSU? Not when you got 1,000, but when you scored your first points.
I do. It was against Tulane in the Assembly Center, and it was a right corner jumper, which today would have been a three, but they didn't have the three back then, so it only counted for two. So, Skylar, you're not even close, big guy, if they had the three-point line. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, I'll ask you one more. Skylar didn't remember the points, but he remembered the shoes he was wearing. Do you remember the shoes you were wearing?
We only had one pair, Cody. We were given Chuck Taylor leather Converse, thanks to Joe Dean and Dale Brown. They were white with the purple star and whatever you call that thing, star and whatever.
That makes it easier to remember then.
Yes. And now I'll tell you this. I'll remember my last shot. That was at the Summit in Houston in the NCAA tournament. We were in the Final Five. We were playing Louisville with Daryl Griffin in that group, and I hit one from the top of the key, and that was my last bucket in the second half to end all things for me. But anyway, Skylar has a lot more to go before he makes his last shot, we hope. And it's a fun team, man, and they got, if they stay healthy, they've got everything you need, because I'm a big believer in the backcourt. And I'm telling you, I don't think there's a better team in the country with a three-guard system that LSU has in Smart and Mays and Waters. I don't think there's a better team with it, and that's why I like their chances to go deep in this thing.
Yep, and those three have been really good together when they're on the floor in SEC play. LSU's plus-minus is really good in the conference. That lineup does not turn the ball over. I know Tremont's been a little turnover-prone this year, but when those three are together, their turnover numbers are really low. So, yeah, that's stuff you can repeat and replicate. And, speaking of NCAA tournament, hopefully Skylar ends up making a shot in the Final Four, and then he can join you in that club as well.
Dadgum right, my friend. Cody Worsham, a busy man. Boot up. It's must listen to, must watch material. And hey, by the way, very well done on the intro with Coach Brown before the Tennessee game. You wrote that thing. That was really, really good, man. Keep it up.
Thank you. Maybe I can join the Screenwriters Guild with all my film credits I'm getting lately.
I'm still waiting for the invite to come on your Boot Up podcast. I'm still waiting.
I'm still waiting, Cody.
We'll do it soon.
Okay. March is approaching. We'll do it soon.
I'm here. All right, buddy. You take care, man. Always great talking to you. Thank you. Cody Worsham, LSU digital media reporter, talking all things LSU at Bama next on Saturday, and then at Florida before they close things out with Vanderbilt. Three regular season games to go. Two very difficult places to play. Lots left on that bone. And we'll be back to wrap up our number one. This is the Jordy Helpert Show.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Helpert Show on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back. This is the Jordy Helpert Show, brought to you by Hooters. Enjoy every Wednesday $2 discounts on Wings Day. Boneless platter all day, every Wednesday. Dine in only at Hooters. After all, Hooters just makes you happy. All right, I got an idea. I got a plan. And you know how outspoken I have been about the New Orleans Pelicans and Anthony Davis and this, that, and the other. But I'm going to make a one-time exception on this one. Who do the Pelicans play tonight? Yeah, that's right. They play the Los Angeles Lakers. That's right. So here's what I do. Alvin Gentry, you go walk up to AD and say, AD, we're taking the ropes off of you tonight. We're going to play you every minute of the game as long as you want to play. And I want you, Anthony Davis, to go out there and get 60 if you can. I want you to play like the best player in the world that you're capable of being. I want you to go for it. We're going to feed you every time. I want you to shoot it every time. I want you to rebound everything. I want you to block shots. We'll call timeouts and rest you, but I want you to go for it. I want you to go for it badly. Get as many as you can. And AD's going to say, well, why? Why? Very simply, I want you to show Magic Johnson, Rob Pelinka, and all those Hollywood types out there what they could have gotten, but who they aren't going to get. I want you, because they're going to be screaming, AD, AD, and you're going to be scoring like crazy. And they tried to strong arm the Pelicans, and we're not, no way we're taking that bunch of bums. We don't want Lonzo Ball. We don't want Brandon Ingram and Kyle Kuzma. They can't even get in the playoffs with the best player in the world, and they can't make it. They're a bunch of bums. We don't want them. We don't want them. So I just want you to show them what they're going to miss out on for at least a year. Now, if you want to go there after another season comes and goes, that's your choice. That's fine. LeBron's going to be 2 years older. But that's okay. We're not sending them to the Lakers. We don't like the Lakers. They tried to higher than high and mighty us to just making a bad deal for this organization. No way. So, AD, go get you 60. Go get 70. Heck, try and beat Kobe's 81. I know it's not going to happen, but we want you to shoot it every time. Become the consummate James Harden. Don't pass it. Just shoot it. And go make it happen. That's my advice. And that's what I would do if I were the New Orleans Pelicans. And I'd tell every teammate out there, we're going to sit. And then after that, we're going to sit you. We're going to sit. We're going to lose every game. We're going to lose every game. But I tell Holiday, and I tell Elfrid Payton, and I tell Etan Moore, and I tell the rest of that group, You don't shoot it. You pass it, and you set screens, and we want AD to put up 50 shots, if that's what it takes. But go out there and get me at least in the 50s. Go get them. And keep on shooting. And let's see how the Laker fans and the Laker management and Jenny Buss, the owner, react to that. How about that? Okay, so that's just my thought on that. Another story out there. Don't understand it, but Johnny Manziel has been cut by the Montreal Alouettes, and it's all about whatever, doing something. He's just he can't go play for another Canadian Football League team. He can't. He's been released and barred from signing with another CFL team for violating an agreement which made him eligible to play. I mean, if there's trouble to be found, it finds Johnny Manziel. Unbelievable. It's unclear what he did to violate the agreement with the Alouettes and the CFL, but they're disappointed. And what's Johnny Manziel going to do now? Wow. Wow, I have no idea what he did. I mean, he's had several off-the-field issues, but he's been quiet of late. Just trouble seems to follow him. Just does. Hour number one, history. Hour number two, coming up. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show.
the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle!
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Hour number two of two. Happy Wednesday, February 27th, the year 2019. School zones are in effect. So be careful as you're out and about on the highways and byways. We got a busy second hour. We'll talk Heisman odds with Michael Huguenin. We'll talk NFL Combine LSU style with Mike Dettillier. It's all coming your way. But as we do each and every day at this time of day, let's start hour number two off the right way, and that is with our daily walk around the sports water cooler. Button, please, CD.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious. Decidedly better.
Well, the Tigers win in hoops. They've got a baseball game tonight. The NFL Combine's about to start up. My goodness gracious, it's never a slow time. Clint, good afternoon, sir.
What is going on, Jordy? It's a great day to be a fan of football because we've got the NFL Combine coming up, and we'll probably talk about that in a lot greater detail on tomorrow's show. But we got some news about the CFL kind of coming down the pipeline with Johnny Football. He's managed to find his way back in the headlines, and of course, it's bad news for him with the Montreal Alouettes releasing him from the team due to violating the terms of his agreement, whatever that means. But is this a step towards him joining the AAF or the XFL?
I mean, he wants to play, so yep. Absolutely. Somebody will take them. And again, this wasn't Montreal letting him go. This was
the CFL
mandating that he be out. So he's looking for anything. He's looking for some place where he doesn't have to have a 9-to-5 job like most of us do. He just wants to play football. He's 26 years old. He played in 8 games trying to resurrect his career. That didn't work, so now he's going to go to plan, what is this, A, B, C, D, whatever. I wish him luck. I mean, I loved watching him play in college, but it just seems like trouble follows him wherever he goes.
Exactly, Jordy. I think that's a big thing is, like, Johnny Manziel just cannot get out of his own way sometimes, and we're seeing that just continue to be an issue for the former Texas A&M Aggie. That being said, though, one quarterback, he's now a free agent. That's former Philadelphia Eagle Nick Foles. That's crazy to think, Jordy, a guy that got him to the promised land and they won the Super Bowl, Nick Foles, and then he winds up getting him on a solid run back into the postseason this year, and now he's off. He's pretty much going to be fighting for a team. Where's the best landing spot for him in your mind, Jordy?
Wow. There's a bunch. Let's see. Jacksonville comes to mind. I wonder if Denver could have a do-over if they'd rather have Foles than Flacco. Gee whiz.
I think they would.
Wow. I think they would as well. Eli's coming back to the Giants. They're going to pick a quarterback in the draft. So I think it's Jacksonville. I think that's the one for Nick Foles. They've got a really good defense. They've got, if Fournette ever gets healthy, they got a decent running game. I'd be surprised if Nick Foles doesn't head down to the lovely state of Florida.
Exactly. I wouldn't be surprised at all if he does that. You brought up Leonard Fournette. Well, he's actually getting some training in right now. I believe this is going to be a lot further up north than you might think, Jordy. I think I was seeing something. It was Montana, I believe, Wyoming, he was training during the offseason. How crazy is that?
Run up those mountains.
Yeah.
Yeah, run up the mountains, and there's no nightlife there, per se, like you are in the big cities, and just get down to basics. This is an important year for Leonard Fournette. It really is, because he mentioned his name around the league, not around Baton Rouge in the state of Louisiana, but around the league, and they don't have a very favorable impression of Leonard Fournette. He needs to have a good season this year, and he's certainly capable of it.
Yeah, he really doesn't have the best look in the world, especially after everything that happened at the end of last season. But I think if he's able to kind of get over some of the injuries that he had, lingering injuries, if you will, from over at LSU, and carry that and turn those into a lot of success stories this season, I think he winds up turning around. And so what have you done for me lately, League, right, Jordy?
Absolutely. No question.
All right, next up, Jordy, we got to talk about LSU hoops getting a big win on the board against Texas A&M last night. How great was it seeing a game where LSU had it well in hand late? Because I feel like,
everybody
let out a sigh of relief.
Yeah, I mean, I was sitting back relaxing in the first half going, okay. Now, A&M did get it, I think, once to single digits or 10 in the second half, but you never had any doubt about the ball game. So for once, finally, no nail biter, no white knuckler, no overtime, none of that kind of stuff. So save that for Indiana and Wisconsin last night. But it was good. Wasn't artistically beautiful. Wasn't a great offensive night by either team. But all that matters a week from now is LSU's, 23-5, 13-2. That's all that matters.
I think what also matters is the fact they got a double bye in the SEC tournament, Jordy, because you got to admit it. Like, when you get to that point and you have a double bye, that looms large. He could potentially be SEC champs for the first time since you were a player, right, Jordy?
Yes, that's right. Thanks for bringing that up. No, you're right. Double bye is critical. Critical. Because the winner, I mean, if you're coming up from the start, that's 4 or 5 games in 4 or 5 days, and that's hard to do, man. That's hard.
Yeah, and I was bringing up the SEC championship game and how y'all team was the last one to do it back in 1980, yep. Jordy. And it made me wonder because, you have the 72 Dolphins every year. They pop the champagne after the last undefeated team goes down. Y'all do something like that every time LSU doesn't win the SEC title?
I think I'm going to make a phone call and get some of my boys together. I never thought about that, but heck yeah. I got several of them I can give a call to that live in this area.
We can do something.
But no, I hope they win the whole thing this year. That would be great.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
It'd be just fantastic, Jordy.
And why didn't I think of that before? Where were you all these years, CD?
Well, I mean, the 9 years after y'all first won the SEC title, I wasn't even in existence at that point.
Shut up. Shut up. Don't be talking age. It's only a mindset. Goodbye.
Hey, I got one more, Jordy. I got one more for you. Because the MLB just announced they're partnering up with the Atlantic League, which is an independent league, and is using it for a testing ground for some new changes to the game. Some of the rumors going around include moving the mound and using TrackMan to determine balls and strikes. Is this a good thing for the future?
Like they do in tennis?
I believe so. I haven't done a whole lot of research on TrackMan, but it's definitely something interesting, just the kind of the testing ground for new changes to the game, considering how the pitch clock discussion has been tabled until 2022. Is this a good thing for the future of the MLB?
Sure. I think baseball should have what tennis has. Those cameras that, that show if a ball's fair or foul. I mean, if tennis can do it, why can't baseball do it?
Why can't football do what hockey's done with them, they have a little, I think they have a little detector on there when it passes the line. Why aren't we seeing with that with football?
That's a great question. I'll have to talk to Mike Dettillier about the NFL and some of these rules coming up. But
as
long as it doesn't make the games just ridiculously long, then I'm all for it. I'm for an eye in the sky, like you talked about in the AAF for football. I mean, the worst seat in the house is on the sideline. The best seat in the house is up high. I'm telling you, the best seat in the house is in the end zone. If you're watching a game, you can see the whole thing unfold right in front of you. I'm amazed they don't charge higher for those seats. But anyway, if they can get it right and do it in a quick fashion, I'm all for all the technology you can get in sports. I'm just all for it. I really am. So there you go.
That's all I got for today, man.
You weren't even born yet. Thanks a lot. You weren't even born yet. Thanks a lot, CD. Making me feel really, really good. But I'll get out of here, and we'll move on, as we always do. That brought to you by Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce on the planet, right there in St. Martinville. The Biard family just doing it right every day for nearly 90 years. That's amazing. Bring a little small bottle wherever you go, because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. College football's got to make up something to get in the news. So the early odds for the Heisman Trophy candidates of 2019 are out. We'll discuss that next with Michael Huguenin of The Athletic here on the Jordy Helfrich Show.
Topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is. Guess what day it is.
It's time to break down the biggest storylines this week with Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. What's up, Michael?
Mike. What day is it, Mike? Hump day!
Yes, it is Michael Huguenin, The Athletic, from Orlando, Florida, kind enough to join us. Michael, how are you, buddy?
Doing quite well.
Awesome. Golly, I guess you're trying to invent news when it comes to college football, but Westgate Las Vegas Superbook just released their opening odds for the 2019 betting favorite of the Heisman Trophy. How about that? And I don't know if it, I guess it's kind of a – is it a surprise to you that Tua Tagovailoa is the betting favorite ahead of his Clemson counterpart, Trevor Lawrence, who outplayed him and won the national championship game?
Yeah, I think that's a mildly surprising, though. Obviously, Tua had the better season last year. Lawrence got the last laugh with a great performance in the title game when Clemson blew out Alabama. But those are the two guys who are going to go into the season – we're talking about this here in late February. By the time late August rolls around, 6 months from now, I think people are going to be tired of hearing about Tua and Trevor Lawrence. So I think people in the SEC outside the Alabama fan base are already tired of hearing about Tua. But, they are way ahead of everybody else. I think Justin Herbert of Oregon is probably the Pac-12's leading contender, though I would argue he had a disappointing season last year. Maybe Oregon does better this year. The one thing that Clemson and Alabama have that Oregon does not is proven wide receivers. Oregon lost its best receiver. And if you're a quarterback, it sure helps to have NFL receivers on your roster. And I'm not sure Oregon has any right now.
How about tied for third best odds at 6-1, former Alabama quarterback, now at Oklahoma, Jalen Hurts. If that Oklahoma coach can do it for 3 years in a row, I just say name your price to be a head coach at the NFL. Whatever price you want, just name it, right?
Yeah, I think Lincoln Riley will be an NFL coach sooner rather than later, though he is one of those college coaches. He genuinely likes recruiting. Mm. He likes pressing the flesh with, come to my school, all that kind of stuff. He likes the back slapping, all that stuff. But you're right. They won Heisman winners at Oklahoma have been transfer quarterbacks. But as good as I think Jalen Hurts can be for Oklahoma this year, I don't see him being a transcendent player like Murray and Mayfield were the last 2 years. I just don't think Hurts can be that same kind of passer. Now, the interesting thing about Lincoln Riley is he's off the Mike Leach tree, which means he's off the Hal Mummy tree, and I think people automatically assume, he throws the heck out of the ball. Well, actually, Oklahoma runs the ball more than they throw it.
That's right.
And this will be the first time he's really had a quarterback who was a legitimate danger running the ball. Now, Mayfield and Murray were dangerous because they could scramble. Hurts is the kind of guy that you can call quarterback runs for. So the Oklahoma spring practice is going to be interesting because there's a school of thought out there that he's going to tweak his offense for more quarterback runs to take full advantage of Jalen Hurts. And let's just say Hurts throws for 3,000 and runs for 1,000. This guy could win the Heisman. So it's going to be an interesting season, but I don't think Hurts is a good enough passer to win the Heisman.
I don't know why they call it the Heisman Trophy Award. They should call it the Quarterback Trophy Award because it's like a trophy for quarterbacks. The other best odds are Justin Fields, the former Georgia quarterback who's transferred to Ohio State. And off the radar to me, but you'll know a lot about him, Nebraska quarterback Adrian Martinez. Tell me about him.
Yeah, Martinez is he's a good player. He was committed to Tennessee for the longest time and then reneged on his commitment and signed with Scott Frost in Nebraska because he saw what Frost did at UCF and liked the offense. And obviously that offense fits him to a T. He's a California kid. He started last season as the number one guy, got hurt, and missed a game or two, and then came back, wasn't fully healthy. Then down the stretch, he was fully healthy. He's a guy who is dangerous with his legs, still has the ways to go as a passer. But, yeah, I think if this were 2020, Adrian Martinez would be going into the season as a top five Heisman guy because I think he's going to have a big year in 2019, just not big enough.
Okay.
But, yeah, he's still getting used to Scott Frost's offense, but he is a talented quarterback, and that offense is built for big numbers by the quarterback.
Michael Hugin in The Athletic, kind enough to join us. So we've named nothing but quarterbacks. Give me some other players, non-quarterbacks, that we need to keep an eye on in 2019.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it is a quarterback award. Running backs, you got Jonathan Taylor of Wisconsin. He ran for 2,100 yards last year, 16 touchdowns, and he was sort of an afterthought because Wisconsin wasn't very good. And the second leading returning rusher nationally is a guy that no one knows, Eno Benjamin at Arizona State. And, you know, we talked a lot, you and I, last year during the season about the job Herm Edwards did at Arizona State. And Herm Edwards got to Arizona State and said, this dude can play. I'm making sure we're going to have a run-centric offense. And Eno Benjamin ran for almost 1,650 yards. So, but I think the only running back who has a legit chance at the Heisman in terms of being a legitimate top five preseason candidate is Jonathan Taylor. He's got the name. He's got the production. And, you know, regardless of who their quarterback is, Wisconsin is going to run the ball behind a gigantic offensive line. Mm-hmm. So, again, Jonathan Taylor ran for almost 2,200 yards last year.
Nobody knows
really
about him.
He did it almost in anonymity because they were not a very good team. And this year I think they'll be a little bit better. And I think Taylor is a guy to watch when it comes to the Heisman. I think he's the only running back going into the season that's going to have a legitimate chance.
What about that do-it-all guy from Purdue, Rondell Moore?
Rondell Moore's an interesting guy. He's from Louisville. He's a guy who excels in space, not a big guy, extremely dangerous on jet sweeps, caught almost 100 passes last year in an offense that had a quarterback who threw the ball a lot, but not necessarily on target, David Blau. Jeff Brohm is a good offensive coach. If he ever truly gets a high-level quarterback at Purdue, that is legitimately going to be an extremely dangerous team. Rondell Moore is a talented player. He could play anywhere in the country. Ohio State wanted him, which means he can play anywhere. But if Rondell Moore were, for instance, at Alabama or at Clemson or at Ohio State, I think people would as well known as he is, I think people would look at Rondell Moore as, my goodness, this guy is a dark horse Heisman guy. Because that's the kind of explosive player he is. You can use him on end around, jet sweeps, screen passes, slants. He can get deep. Extremely dangerous with the ball in his hand and just a fun player to watch. But, again, I don't think Purdue is going to be anything more than a 7- or 8-win team. And you can't win the Heisman on a 7- or 8-win team.
He is Michael Hugin of The Athletic. I've got to ask your opinion on a non-college football but a college basketball issue. And it's directly related to this part of the world. It came out earlier in the week that Will Wade of LSU, along with the coach, Sean Miller of Arizona, were going to be subpoenaed in this April 22nd trial dealing with corruption in college basketball. When you heard that, when you saw that, what should LSU fans be thinking about?
I was not surprised at Sean Miller's name was on the list because Arizona has been embroiled in controversy for 2 years now, maybe even longer, because of the way they do daily recruit. I was mildly surprised that Wade was on there. I think, you know much better than I do, but I know college basketball recruiting is a sewer. And you know better than I because you played it and are far closer to the game. But, yeah, the problem, I think, is you don't want college football recruiting to be like that, and it's getting there. But I think if I'm an LSU fan, yeah, I'm a little bit taken aback because, again, if you're – I'll be honest. If you're lumped in with Sean Miller, that's not a good look.
Yeah.
So, because, again, the Arizona – you and I have talked about this 100 times, too. There were a big – there were five assistant coaches who were initially brought up when this started like 18 months ago. And you and I were talking about how assistant coaches don't go rogue. Let's get serious here.
That's right.
And that's right. Head coaches always like to have plausible deniability. But at some point, that plausible deniability, people start shaking their head and go, yeah, right. And that's where we are with Sean Miller. Because, his name's been in the news for this kind of stuff for years now. But the Will Wade stuff is, I'm assuming disconcerting for people at LSU. At the same time, I got to think some people at LSU knew this was coming. But again, to me, if you're lumped in with Sean Miller, that's not a good thing.
He is Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. Thank you, my friend. I hope you have a great week. We're getting ready for March Madness. We'll start talking about that next time. Thank you, my friend.
You, sir. Talk to you next week.
All right, Michael Huguenin, The Athletic, here on the Jordy Helfrich Show, brought to you by DC's Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia Exit in Brobridge. Frankie's a huge sports fan. He's got everything you need for your travels, whether you're going 5, 50, or 500 miles. DC's Little Capital Exxon has it for you. I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia Exit in Brobridge. We're back with more after this.
With a guy whose last name is a state. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back. This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. And all eyes that follow the NFL are zoomed in on Indianapolis, Indiana. The annual NFL Combine, which begins on Friday. So I wanted to give us give some information on six LSU players at the Combine and what this expert analyst has to say about them. And, of course, we're talking about Mike Dettillier. He's on Twitter at Mike Dettillier, the M&D Draft Report. If you love the draft in Nashville, this is the material you need to get. So you have a good understanding of who's who and who's not. But MD, kind enough to join us. Michael, how are you?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you, Jordy.
Look, before we get to the LSU players, I'm still mind-boggled how the competition committee that's meeting in Indianapolis says that changes to the current officiating procedures seem unlikely to happen this year. Of course, we're referencing you know what, against you know who, and it just doesn't seem to me that they're going to do anything about it. What are your thoughts on that?
It's no surprise to me. I mean, you know, I said this the day after, that there was no way that the NFL would make any major rule change involving this. You know, listen, I've been doing this 34 years.
Yeah.
You don't do anything fast. Yeah. Nothing. And so what would give anybody the thought that they're going to make all these rule changes because of that one play? That's not the way the NFL works. And they would have to admit that they were wrong. And that's the other part about it. That they're not going to do that. So they bring out all these old fools of the world that, you know, I've been in the sports business 50 years. This is a massive change. No, it's not. Mm-mm. If you've been in this business for more than a year, you should know. That's not how the NFL works. They are slow to react to anything at any time. We've seen this debate upon what's a catch and what's not a catch. how long has that went on, Jordy? Basically 8, 9, 10 years?
Yep.
When did they make a real definitive part in it? Last year. Did we have that discussion? No.
Yes. I got you.
But look how long. So what would give anybody the thought that it's going to change because of that one play? It's not.
We would love to see it. All of us would. If that play had happened in the Super Bowl and had decided the outcome of the Super Bowl, would that have made any snowball's difference at all?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
And this is the reason why. The Monday morning, immediately after the Saints-Rams NFC Championship game, I heard Rich McKay, who is the president of the competition committee, say that there's, you know, we've debated this, went through different ways. No one's come up with a consensus on how to change it. We are all happy with the replay rule. And that we would look at an amendment, which means a small tweak of the rule, but we're not going to do anything drastic. Well, I didn't have to go any farther than that. This is the guy who runs the committee.
Yeah.
John Elway, Stevie Jones, all of them kind of all parroted the exact same thing. So this is no surprise to me at all. We would love to see something change that it wouldn't happen to someone else. You know, it wouldn't happen to another team. There's nothing you can do about the Saints game. But it doesn't happen to someone else in that same spot. But the NFL seems very secure in what they do and how they do it, and they are not going to make a change. And I think what they don't want to do is give the impression that because of that play, we changed our rules because we were wrong about it. I think somewhere down the line you will see a major an adjustment, it's not going to be this year. And look how that sentence is worded. It's basically worded for 2019.
Mm-hmm.
They're very slick about how they word that particular deal, and they bring up the human element. And there's always human element involved
in
playing and coaching. Come on. Jordy, you played at a high level. You understand that there is that part in everything. But we've heard on shows that I've done, many of them, we've had former owners, we've had people that have been administrators say, you know what, if they can't get it right, why are we doing replay to begin with?
Right.
If they can't get it right, why are we doing it?
Yes.
We had the former owner of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Gay Culverhouse. She came on with us twice and made the comment, nothing will change. And she said, made it very clear right afterwards, yeah, they may make a little bit of an, but they will not, because their egos are so big, they are not going to admit that mistake cost the Saints a chance to go to the Super Bowl. And so she was dead right about it. She said, I've been in those meetings. They're basically, we like what we have. We're not spending any more money on technology. We're not spending any money on full-time officiating. We're not spending any money because it cost us money to extend the game. They don't like it today because of the pitch and catch part of the game. The game's now 3 hours, 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Jordy, you and I grew up in an era where they ran the ball. That clock continuously rolled.
That's right.
You didn't have 3 hour and 10 minute games.
That's right.
Those games by 2:30, they were over with in most cases. So, because they want to move to the next game,
that's
their money to the next game and to the next. And so, this is no shock to me at all. I wish it would be different, but it just is not.
And they certainly don't want to get to the spectrum like when LSU played Tennessee in basketball and they went to the replay 50,000 times. I mean, that's just absurd. All right, so we'll table that discussion. But the NFL Combine's this weekend, and I'm kind of wondering your thoughts on how, for instance, one of the most decorated defensive players in LSU football history, the only player to win the Dick Butkus Award as the top linebacker in the country, the first player in Southeastern Conference history to be the league's defensive player of the week 4 times in one season. Devin White should be a pretty darn good NFL player, I would think.
Yeah, and, you know, for most, I'll say this, Jordy, you know, having grew up here and clipping beyond 50 years old, he's the greatest linebacker I've ever seen at LSU.
Okay.
And listen, I've seen some pretty good ones, you know, from, you know, from Mike Anderson to Warren Capone, Rydell Melanson. You can kind of go down the list of guys. Mm-hmm. Eric Hill was a tremendous football player. Brady James. Devin's the best. And here's the best part. He's a football puppy at linebacker. People forget he was a running back. He was a big-time running back in high school. And I remember speaking to Devin when he came to LSU. He still had thoughts of playing linebacker. I mean, of playing running back.
Right.
They had to convince him to play linebacker. That was his way to get on the field quicker. Now, I took a look at there and seen Fournette and Geis and Williams. Man, you know, that's going to be a pretty tough role for me to get into. But in his mind, he really felt that was his spot. And then, you know, he gradually, you know, came into it. And he's still a puppy, learning all the intricacies of playing linebacker. But look at his athleticism, his ability to get around blocks and would-be blocks. Because today it's not about taking people on and beating them at the point of attack. Mm-hmm. Those days are gone. You occasionally have to do it, but really it's getting a space and getting around there. You look at his athleticism. Man, that dude can run.
Yeah.
And he can run north, south, east, west. He is a really good open field tackler, and he's gotten much better. And I've talked to Coach O about this. He's gotten much better in the pass coverage part of the game.
That's important.
Where that's such a big part of the NFL, where they take you out if you can't cover on third down. But he's a three-down linebacker. He's a guy that's going to stay on the field because he can cover. He can put that big body in reverse, and he reads and he recognizes the coverages very well for a guy who doesn't have a lot of experience doing it. So, you know, he's a top 12, 13 pick in this draft. Now, a lot of that has to do with team needs. I don't give a damn about what they tell you about player on the board. Come on, that's a bunch of malarkey.
That's
anybody believe
that?
I got a skiing lodge behind my home here on the bayou. I can sell you too. They pick in the biggest need area. And so you look at teams, you know, from that 8 to like 12, 13 mark, and they got a couple of them there that would certainly look at the linebacker position to upgrade. And Devin, you know, he had some issues in high school, really matured tremendously at LSU. He's been a model guy there. And, you know, in talking to O, you know, a lot of times just kind of BSing, you know, when he made the comment to me that, listen, I coach Ray Lewis, I had Patrick Willis at Ole Miss, he's in that same category. I was like, whoa, that's some mighty big words.
Yeah.
Because Ed doesn't really kind of go on and on about a player. That's not his deal. Now, you got to listen to how he says it sometimes, because he's kind of giving you the hint without giving to you. But he didn't have to give me the hint. He came out and said he's in that category, Ray Lewis and Patrick Willis, and that's some big moccasins.
Mike Dettillier, kind enough to join us. We know he's going to be a first-round pick in all likelihood. Greedy Williams is going to be a first-round pick as well. But there's some other LSU players. Who has the at the combine and at the pro day, who has the best chance to really improve his stock? A Foster Moreau, Nick Brissett, a John Battle, just to name a few. Who in your mind, or Cole Tracy maybe, who has a chance to really, really up their stock the most?
I think a lot of those guys are pretty much, you know, where they're going to head in the draft. But Cole Tracy is the ultimate kind of wild card here. With so many teams looking for a consistent kicker inside the 50-yard line, Cole can do it. And he's working out with Martin Anderson out in Georgia. And, you know, he's getting trained by a guy who was pretty good at doing it.
Sure was.
And, you know, he just saw – I think the biggest worry for LSU when they started the season was he was doing it in practice. But could he translate that into a game and how he handled pressure kicks? you saw, you know, he was able to do it right off the bat. Mm-hmm. And that was impressive. We haven't seen a kicker like that at LSU in quite some time. I think he's got a chance to be the first kicker off the board. And I think the negative is going to be he doesn't kick off.
I got
you. Know, so that part about him kicking inside the 50, he can physically get a little bit stronger and maybe widen that up a little bit more. But, you know, that's where you want him to be the guy. And today, you know, Martin, he told you, man, when you were kicking in the 70s percent range, when he was playing, he's, man, you were a top-flight kicker. Today, they get rid of you.
Yeah,
you know, they want you to kick in the 80s.
Amazing.
You know, that's the thing. And you look at Cole, he has that capacity to do so, and he handles pressure real well. And I think one of the things Martin is helping him with is getting over the kick. He said, you know, a lot of times, he said, you know, it's very similar to a golfer that makes a bad shot, maybe, you know, craps out late in the tournament.
Right.
And
right.
It affects him the next tournament, the next shot. And so, you know, his deal is always, you know, I missed a bunch of those kicks. Michael Jordan did a commercial about all the shots he missed late in the game.
Right. Right.
It's not about the one you missed. It's about the one you kick. And it's getting him to move on because he said, you know, in this world, we are living in that kind of range where something bothers somebody of a certain age, it stays with them a while. It's hard for them to shake it off.
Yeah, good point. Good point. Mike Dottilier, the M&D draft report. When is your draft report available for those people that crave that?
Well, we hope to have it out in the first couple of days of April. Normally we get it out around the 5th
Perfect.
Or 6th and that sort of range. So working on it now. You know, a lot
I'm
of
sure.
it is done. It's basically sort of editing what I have because, you know, man, it's like it would be like Encyclopedia Britannica.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to edit it to the point where it's, you know, like 212
yeah, it's
pages.
Not, it's not Mein Kampf. I understand. I understand completely.
Yeah, and so you want to make it readable that if you've never seen that player, you want the reader to understand what you're talking about when you give the ups and downs of him and what he can get better at.
This is, fill in the blank, this is a great draft for what?
Oh, it's the best defensive tackle draft I've ever done.
Wow.
And it's 34 years for me. And so, yeah, it's really deep there, talent, depth-wise, where, you know, normally it sort of ends for defensive tackles, late second, early third. You know, the talent and the depth, and then it really winds out. This time, you're talking about you got depth into the fourth round. I mean, you got talent depth that late, and that's unusual.
The
other area would certainly be tight end. A lot of the juniors coming out certainly enhance that with a T.J. Hockenson from Iowa, a Noah Fant, and a Jay Sternberger, and Irv Smith Jr. So you're talking about the best of the best, Isaac Nada from Georgia. All those guys were juniors. They came out.
Yeah.
And it's really, really helped out. And also another area that's underrated, and they don't have a Willie Rofe or a Jill Thomas in this draft class, but I think offensive tackle, because of some of the juniors that have come out, has become a pretty good area also. But so, you know, it's a meat and potato draft when you look at it. Defensive tackles, offensive tackle, tight end.
You better have them to win. Let me ask you this real quick: where the Saints are located, what's a feasible? What do they need in your opinion the most out of this draft?
Jordy, I think, you know, looking back and how this team has handled free agency, they have always tried to address or always have addressed their immediate needs in free agency to sort of leave some opening. Come draft time that you have a little bit of wiggle room. They understand, you know, that best player on the board. And it's great for a sound bite and it's great to tell, you know, the fans, everything else. But they want a little bit of wiggle room there. So I suspect the Saints in free agency will sign a veteran wide receiver, will sign a veteran tight end.
Okay.
And I think if they spend a lot of money, it's going to be on a veteran defensive tackle. Why wouldn't you?
Okay.
Last year at this time, you had a healthy Sheldon Rankins. You had Tyler Davidson with one more year on a contract. He's a free agent today. Who knows when Rankins is going to come back from the Achilles.
Right. That's right.
And the probable suspension of David Onyemata. With all that said, what did they do right off the bat? They went after Ndamukong Suh and Muhammad Wilkerson, two defensive interior players. So if they did it last year, why wouldn't they do it this year? When you look at the situations are totally different, and so that leaves you some opening there on what to do. Would you go after a young tight end if the right one was there? Another area would be a tackle that could play guard.
Gotcha.
We all saw that once injuries started to clip this team up front, they weren't the same. And they didn't really have a legitimate guy that could play that tackle position. They had to start maneuvering. And so that comes into play. And you never have enough good cover corners. That's always there. So it would give you an area there of a tight end, of an offensive lineman, defensive back, of who's available. You're talking about late in round two. That's a lot of water run under the brook by the time you get the pick.
Yeah. All right, Michael, we greatly appreciate your time. Great stuff, as always. The M&D Draft Report, look forward early April. Thank you, Michael. Have a great one, buddy.
Thank you, Jordy. Appreciate it, buddy.
Take care. Mike Dettillier, the M&D Draft Report. We're back. This is the Jordy Helpert Show.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Helpert Show on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the app.
All right, finishing touches on this Wednesday edition, February 27th of the Jordy Hultberg Show. Good guess. That was fun. That was fun. But we have to do our daily history lesson. So without further ado, it was on this day, February 27th, the year 1987, the NCAA canceled SMU's entire 1987 football schedule for gross violations of NCAA rules regarding athletic corruption. Boy, did they buy players. They gave SMU the proverbial death penalty. On this day, February 27th, the year 1987. Birthday wishes. If today is your day, February 27th, happy birthday from all of us at 103.7 The Game and from everyone under the entire Delta Media umbrella. We hope you have a fabulous day. You share it with, happy 42nd birthday, Tony Gonzalez. Yep, I used to love it when the Saints beat his Atlanta Falcons. I sure did. Happy 59th birthday, Big Game James Worthy, the North Carolina Tar Heel, Los Angeles Laker, Hall of Famer. And happy 49th birthday to the pride of Maurice, Louisiana, jockey extraordinaire Kent DeSormo. Happy birthday. If it's your anniversary, happy anniversary. I hope you keep adding year after year after year to it. Special thanks to Ben McDonald previewing LSU Southern tonight. Cody Worsham recapping the LSU-Texas A&M basketball game. Michael Huguenin with the early Heisman odds. And Mike Dettillier with the NFL Combine, and much, much more. CD, great job as always. Thanks to all of you for listening, to our partners that make it possible each and every day. Hope you have a great rest of your Wednesday. Come on back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4, same great station, 103.7 The Game. Until then, I'm Jordy Helpert. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.